I came down here 6 years ago from Edinburgh. I'd been writing songs up in Edinburgh and I'd been sending them down to London, and nothing was happening. And since then I've discovered when you walk into record companies, there's big piles of cardboard boxes full of tapes and that never ever get listened to. And most A&R men will tell you that they very rarely sign up people on the strength of a cassette. It's usually they see you've got to have a live band normally for them to go and see, unless you've got a good manager to take stuff in. So I had to come down to London to try and make it.
Did you, like, 6 years ago play a similar kind of music that you play now?
Yeah, I've always been doing rock music, but I came down as a writer first. I'd been in a few bands before, and I'd always been like guitarist. I didn't sing. We had a brilliant singer up there, and so I came down and I had these demos with myself singing, and I sent them to people, trying to get them to do my songs. And I got a couple of small bands recorded them. Then people kept telling me that I should be doing more material, So my manager heard one of the tapes that I had, and then he put me in a studio, and then a year later I had a record deal. Yeah.
So how long ago was that?
That's I think I got the deal about 3 years ago. Yeah. So it took a little while. Like when I first come down here, I just used to play around the pubs and that. Just doing covers, just doing anything, just to try and get money together, And that had to help develop the singing as well. So it was really good experience for me to do that.
You said before we switched to tape on that
Yeah.
you did the Irish pubs and
Yeah, I used to do play all the. Once you play in one Irish place, if you're any good, then all the other Irish people in there, they're drinking all the other Irish pubs, and they're telling the people from these places, and it's they got in touch with us, and we play another Irish pub, and then in the end up, just everybody I knew down here were Irish. And it was just like London was just full of these Irish people, actually one guy actually put me up for 3 years in his house for nothing, which is quite handy. He's actually credited on the album, funnily enough.
All right.
Yeah. That was good. It was good playing these places. You used to play. You're supposed to close the pub at 11 o'clock, and what would happen was they'd just close the doors, and we'd be blasting out like till 1 and 2 in the morning, and the place would be packed. And like every so often, like just tell everybody to be quiet, and then put the lights out, while the police went past or something, and then they'd just be at it again. It was crazy. And there's one guy. The guy actually stayed with. He was in the pub once from. I don't know if this was relevant or not. Probably isn't.
Absolutely.
He was in the pub once from Friday night till Wednesday afternoon. I mean, they can drink. They can drink a lot.
Well, I mean, how little did he stay in bed after that with hangovers?
I don't know. He probably went to work the following day. I mean, they're really tough, these guys. I've seen them go to work with broken ankles on the building sites and that. They're just brought up with drink. So, I mean, because Scottish are supposed to be really big drinkers, but Irish as a sort of overall nation are fantastic drinkers, unbelievable.
So was that like when you came from Scotland down to London, you felt particular empathy with Irish people?
Well, there always has been. It's pretty stupid in a way, but I mean, it's a lot is to do with history. It's this thing where England were the master race and invaded Scotland and invaded Ireland and Wales, and any time. Everybody, with football matches and things like that, Scotland don't care if they get beat by every country under the sun, apart from England. It's like England, they must beat England when they come down and play football. That's everything to them. And it's the same with Irish and the Welsh. And like, but when the Welsh like come up to Scotland and things like that, it's really, really friendly. The atmosphere is like fantastic, And that and same with Irish. Whereas with English, there's just this thing that goes back hundreds of years. But I'm not into football anyway.
No, not even a
Nah.
Hibs supporter.
Well, funnily enough, I'm doing a song for the Hibs.
Really?
Yeah, I was a Hibs supporter as a kid. I must admit, I must admit, I was a Hibs supporter. There's a guy, there's a friend of mine. He's a lawyer. He came down to Scotland round about the same time as me. He came down from Scotland, and he now owns Hibs. He bought them. I'm doing a song for them at the moment.
I do hope it's not going to be one of these typical football sing-along things.
No, I just want to be tasteful this time.
So that's a particular occasion. They haven't won anything this season.
No, they haven't won anything. It's just so that I'll be ready for the start of the season. See, a friend, the guy that was in a band before, he did the harp song. He sang the song for the harps, you see. Which most of my relatives are fans of the harps. But I just like to do the thing, and the same guy's going to sing it as well. The harps one.
Bit of trees in there, surely.
I know, he's a harp supporter too. But he gets better treatment from the hips.
Is the difference between hearts and hips so along the similar lines as the one between Celtic and Rangers?
No, it's not the same. No, like that's just crazy. That's like Northern Ireland,
yeah. Yeah, right.
You know, that's. I don't know why. What this to do with religion? Not that they are particularly religious people, but the thing in Edinburgh with the hips and hearts is, it's not so much a religious thing. You don't just get Catholics or Protestants supporting either team. In fact, Colin, who supports Hearts, is a Catholic, and like, but there were Catholics. Yeah, it's all mixed up. The Rangers and Celtic thing keep the same by not having Catholic players in the Rangers team. You see, I think they've got one now.
What about the working class, middle class of dividers? Is that sort of playing to Hearts hips?
No, neither.
So it really is just two teams.
Just two teams. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Just on one side of the town. It's funny, I always find it really funny how people can be like that about football teams, because you have each team could be, they could transfer players from either team, they could move to a different ground, or they could buy the Hibs ground, and all you're supporting is a name. They could change their strips, couldn't they? They could change every single thing, manager, directors, grounds, and what you're supporting. It's weird.
What happened to my team down here, like at Watford's, came up from the 4th division the year I arrived here, so it's a sentimental attachment.
Oh yeah, great man.
And their manager left at the end of last season, and within like 2 months, absolutely practically every player had changed, you know, everyone left, all new players, and you know, new players were shit, so the team goes down.
Yeah, strange. I know, it'd be good if you were supporting the same people, you know, and you're into their personalities and things like that. But to support a name, which is all it is, there's nothing else. I find it really strange, and how people can actually get violent about it is just beyond me.
Did you ever sort of like support bands in that fashion? Like you travelled around with them and followed them around Scotland? Or
no, no, I've never. The only person that, there are a few people that I've sort of really looked up to musically and that. I've never followed them or anything like that, or had posters of them. Peter Green, the guitarist out of Fleetwood Mac, who was there before, like the guy that played Albatross and all that sort of stuff, and the real feel stuff, you know, he was brilliant. Marvin Gaye and Al Green as singers and that, but I mean, they are just assholes, you know what I mean? When you see them being interviewed, you think, God, what's that? When they sing with such knowledge and conviction, you think they know everything. And then when you hear them talking, they're just, they're really conceited. I don't know, it puts me off people.
A few times,
it's such a big disillusion, isn't it?
Yeah, like you heard this sort of soul record, and really you're looking forward to the interview with the bloke or the woman, and all you're getting is. Nothing.
Yeah, this,
you
this
get
big
annoyed because it's so like on the rest of the
That's time. Right, you just get this big enormous ego in front of you. And you think, God, that's not the person that's saying how sorry he felt when he hurt that person in that song or something like that. He's quite, it's really strange because when you hear Al Green singing "Let's Stay Together," right? And he just sings it, it's that much feel, there's no effect, there's nothing, it's dry. He's right up at the front of the mic singing it. As if he really knows that experience and he knows how it should feel. And then when you hear him talking, you think, what a clown. You know what I mean? He's just a nutcase. I don't know.
So you were never sort of into the heavy rockers?
Yeah, well, I would say like
Spooky Tools and stuff?
No, I liked Hendrix as well, yeah. I actually had I drew him on my wall. That's my nearest ever got to being a fan, I suppose. Yeah. My mother didn't like that though.
surprised.
No.
Bet you made a botch job of it as well.
Well, actually, I'm not a good drawer, but what I did was I put it in tiny little squares, you know, sectioned, I'd drawn off, and then I just did one square at a time, and that's what it did look like him. But I mean, I dare say if I'd met him, probably wouldn't feel the same. You know what I mean? When you see people up there, they're up there as like gods or something. And when you talk to them, they're just the same as everybody else. But a bit wasted with all the attention they've had.
So when you started, I mean, how old were you when you started getting involved in groups?
15. I was at school and I got dragged into this band as a bass player. So I started off playing bass. I bought this guitar for £8 and started playing almost right away. It's good. We used to play this gig. We got £8 for it as well, fun enough. And you'd have to do 3 spots a night, and it was £8 between the whole band. It's like, it's nothing. But you do it just to play, you know. And it's still like that now.
No,
you didn't have drinking, and you weren't allowed drinking in clubs. And these places used to be packed. They were mobbed, like the 3 stories of bands. The bands on every floor playing, and it'd be like 3 bands on each floor. And the place would just be packed all night, like thousands of kids coming in and out. It was great.
Well,
it was a really great scene up in Scotland at that time.
Music clubs or working?
They were just music clubs, that's all. There was nothing else. There was maybe you could buy a Coca-Cola, and that's all. There was no drink at this time. And like lots of bands used to do 2 gigs a night. You'd be playing 6-7 nights a week, and you'd do two gigs a night, 2 or 3 on Sunday. It was just like music everywhere. It was a really great scene. And there was all these places for kids to go, which there isn't now. All there is discos and drinking clubs.
What time period are we talking about now?
We're talking about the early 70s.
Right.
And so it was just such... Right.
So you were born mid-50s?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And it was great. It was a really brilliant, really exciting scene. Not every band knew every other band. But it's nothing like that now. Because people can't make money out of it. You know, people want to make a lot of money. They don't want to make 1 in 6 on each person coming in, you know, that sort of stuff. It's a totally different scene now.
Well, I mean, who financed these things in those days? Why did they make money then?
Well, people were happy with a bit less. You know, people don't... The money you can make from having a disco with drink, it's a lot more than you can have from... Like, property wasn't what it is now either, so these were big places right in the centre of Edinburgh that like, probably didn't cost that much to rent. You know, some of them were fairly derelict sort of buildings. But they're packed. You get thousands of people cramming themselves in. You know, all these young kids. It was great.
Sounds brilliant.
Yeah, it was. It was a really exciting period. And you just get bands like interchanging with other bands, and you just all these bands coming. This coming from everywhere.
So did you do in those days also cover other people's songs?
That's basically what it was. That during that period, it was almost everybody. You'd maybe throw in one of your own songs or something, but almost every act was just doing songs that were in charts, Tamla Motown stuff, you know, like import sort of soul type things, all that sort of stuff. And the rock thing was all happening as well. That was, you know, quite a lot of bands getting into the rock stuff and just doing Jimi Hendrix songs or whatever. Or
that must have been a sight, a bunch of 16 and 17 year olds doing Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, yeah, everybody, it was like jumping up and down on wah-wah pedals and fuzz boxes, you know, that was the. It was great, and there was some really great guitarists coming out of that period. It was good.
Was it bands like what? The Average Rag bands?
They used to be called the Dream Police. And they were a three-piece, just a three-piece band at that time. And they came down and they were, like everybody used to rave about them, you know, this band. And it was just 3 of them, and it astounded me that they could get so much sound just with a guitarist, a bass and a drum, you know. We played with them once. I'm just trying to think who else. Nazareth, we used to play with them maybe every three weeks or something like that. I was in a band called The Phoenix, and they were called The Shadettes at that time.
The what?
The Shadettes. And they were resident in this big, it was like a 2,000 people used to get in this Kinema Ballroom, it was called, and they used to play there every week, and they were the resident band. And nobody was interested in them. Like, it was this band, they were doing Led Zeppelin. It's at that time, it just sounded, what's that? It's just sounded so weird, you know, this music. But you could tell, like, the guitarist was brilliant. Like, Manny, he was a great guitarist. And I used to get feedback from my guitar, and he showed me how not to get feedback and things like that. I was, like, sort of looking up at God. and they got kicked out of there for playing heavy metal, for playing Led Zeppelin songs. They got booted out, and then next time you changed their name, like, became Nazareth. Just trying to think who else came out there. Pilot, all that sort of stuff, you know. And Ian Berenson, like the guitarist from that year, he was like, at 14 year old, he was the guitarist in Edinburgh. He's now one of the top session players down here. He was in Pilot, and like everybody used to go and see this band East West, and he was like the guitarist. And I joined after he left. I joined this band after he left, and it was like I could hardly play anything. I'd just come off bass, and I was suddenly a lead guitarist. So I went away and I listened to like Eric Clapton, Peter Green, and all these people, and just kept and like actually started getting really on top of the guitar. You know, that period, and it was great.
So you already, you left school and you became
Just at that period you couldn't live. The money you were getting at these gigs, you're getting £10 between a whole band and this pedal to come off it and your amplifier. There was no money, so you had to work as well. And you had to try and find some sort of time to rehearse, which was usually on like a Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon, because you were playing at nights. You know, it was a great scene, but there was no money. Like, I played with this band that were playing solidly every week, and at the end of it, after a year, I got a guitar out, and that was it. You know.
Liverpool East West.
I joined East West after Ian Berenson left. Yeah, that was a good period.
What day job do you have?
Started off working in a shoe shop. My mother wanted me to join the civil service, but I failed because my hair was too long. I worked in a shoe shop, washing dishes in a hotel, packing coal, delivering coal, swept the streets, did the buckets, anything at all, anything to get money.
So the real ideal is for the music.
Oh yeah, that's all that was in your head. You were just thinking, I don't know if I was thinking I want to be a star or what. I was just thinking I just wanted to play in bands. The big goal in that time was to play at a place called the Top Story. That was like my first sort of big aim in life, was to play at Top Story, and which was a dingy hole, you know. One day I'll play at the Top Story. So you play there, and then you want to play at a bigger place, you know. And it just sort of, it moved on from that all the time. Every time you reach something, you wanted something else. Mm-hmm. And eventually the big goal in life became, I wish I was a professional musician. Then you wouldn't have to work and you could just do your music. And so, like, that became the goal. And then after that, then you started thinking seriously that you wanted to be successful, you know.
Did you sort of reach that particular goal, turn professional, when you were still in Scotland?
I was in Scotland, no, I did. But even that was a very, very low level of money. There was no money at all. You just got by. It was just enough money to get by, and lots of things you'd have to go and sign on or get another job, you know, and go back to working again and then try and get professional again.
So coming down to London, wasn't it sort of like dispiriting then to find that you loved writing songs and you own music and all that, and then find yourself going from pub to pub playing other people's...
Well, see, the thing is, doing that, going from pub to pub playing other people's music, I found that really exciting. It sounds ridiculous, but you got immediate feedback whatever you were doing, and like you can write your songs away, but you don't know what they're like, you know. You don't, when you played gigs and you played something really well, it was great, and like you got the audience clapping and that, and that was a great feeling for me, actually playing like that in that type of situation. It also gave me experience other people's songs, you know, like songs that you might dismiss, you think, oh, that's rubbish, and you learn it and you think, god, this is really a great song. You know, lots, even some of these really old songs, even something like Who's Sorry Now or something like that, you know, stuff like that. It's a sin to tell a lie. Do you know any of these ones? No, they're real old, they're like war songs from the Second World War or something like that, but they're great. Yeah, so I didn't find that dispiriting. It was one of the most enjoyable periods actually playing in my life, because you could play different songs every night. When you were with a band, you were playing the same songs again and again and again. Whereas doing that, you think, oh, I'll try something else. Or you might remember something and you just play it. You know, you didn't have to think, oh, I've learnt this song. And lots of times I would do songs and just make it up on stage, totally, just as if I was writing a song. Mm-hmm. And I fancy one of the best songs I've got, I just did it on stage, I just made it up as I went along. It's one of the few things I've been able to remember without putting it down on tape. And when I got home, I put it down. It's like, I've not got an album yet, but I will get it on one.
So, right, when you got the recording contract,
yeah, that was
3 years ago, that was obviously a big change.
It was like I just climbed to the top of Mount Everest or something. That was like one of the biggest buzzes in my life. And it was a good buzz for my family and all that as well, like my mother and father and my brothers and that. But my dad died like the following week, which was because he was always a big fan, you know, but in other bands and that used to be the t-shirt, the like Bilbo Baggins t-shirt and that, going to the pub, and he'd you know, he'd like look up, watch, read the music press in the paper and all that sort of stuff. And that sort of took the whole thing away, you know. And then but that's when I wrote Brothers and that. You know, that's have you heard the last album, have you?
Yes.
Yeah. So but that was an amazing feeling. And things did change after that, yeah, quite drastically. Because it meant the things that you were writing, you were suddenly doing something with them instead of just lying there. I don't think I ever felt dispirited though, because I always thought, you always think something will happen, you know, all the time, doesn't matter what.
So when you turned sort of when that recording contract was there, and you suddenly like had to concentrate on writing songs, getting an album prepared and all that sort of thing, didn't you sort of miss the buzz of performing live then?
I do sort of miss that. I've just got a band together now.
I saw you at Marquee the other
day. Oh, did you? Yeah. Oh, right, yeah.
Very tight, I mean, for you saying just the other day.
Yeah, that's right. Aye. Well, we rehearsed for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was done after 2 weeks. It was already after 2 weeks, you know. So the guys, I've just got a really good band this time. I wasn't... Before, when... So, the band, yeah, they're a great band. Lauren Tartus on guitar. I don't know if you've heard them. I used to play with Phil Lynott.
All right, I wasn't familiar with the late names, to be honest.
Oh, right.
I mean, how did you pick these people?
Well, they were actually a band that's managed by my manager as well, and they'd had a bit of trouble getting singers.
What were
they called? I don't know what... Well, Lawrence did have a band called LA Secrets at one time. And it was the Phil Lynott's Grand Slam for a couple of years, or a year or two, I don't know how long, when he was like 19 years old. He's only been playing two guitar for 2 years. He's amazing. He's an amazing guitarist. He's one of the fastest guitarists I know. But he can also, when he plays slow, he can play with great feel, which is unusual. Usually you've got one or the other. And they had a band together and they'd been trying out singers, and every time, like, the singers let them down or they weren't good enough or whatever, and somebody suggested that we get together for touring and that, and it's worked out really well. The keyboard player was also, he was the blind guy, you know, Reg. He played on the album, he played all the way through an album. He's great. One of these guys, you play something to him once and he listens and he just goes in there and starts playing it right away, and there's no like fumbling for what key it's in or anything like that. It's just a real natural. It's brilliant.
And you also certainly seem to really enjoy
hearing
live.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's great. I'm glad I've got this band together though. It should be good.
Is this going to be a sort of real touring outfit?
Yeah,
As an ongoing thing?
Right, we've got another five gigs here. Mm-hmm. Then we're going across to America to do three, sorry, like one in New York, one in Detroit and one in LA, just for industry type gigs, you know, like we'll do clubs, but just so that people across here can see us. Detroit will be a bigger one because the last record did really well there. It's in the top 10 for about 2 months or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was now. So, and then we'll come back and then we'll tour Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll probably be around about September. If in between time we can get some festivals or something like that, we'll probably do that. We'd sooner tour earlier, but I don't think there is any tours around about, you know, in the middle of summer. Somebody was saying you can only get festivals at that time.
Holidays.
So that's no point.
Yeah.
Where do people go for holidays?
Italy mostly.
Do they?
It's like going to Italy for 3 weeks ends up being cheaper for you than staying in Switzerland for 3 weeks.
Oh, right, yeah.
So it's really good, and it's just around the corner.
Yeah, it's funny because people... Yeah, that's getting better now, though, isn't it? It seems to be taking off in the last few years, huh?
Mm.
Yeah, because most people from here go to Spain for some reason.
Well, I mean, some people in Switzerland go also, it's just further away.
Yeah.
You know, like Italy is so convenient, so near, and
yeah,
everybody can just hop on.
And do you all go to the south of Italy?
Sorry?
Do you go to the south?
It tends to be sort of halfway down on either side, but the south, yeah, again, is sort of pretty, you know, a long way away.
Oh, right, yeah.
And you have to be more enterprising, like you have to be more into walking rather than just grilling, getting grilled on the beach or things like that.
Oh, right.
So you tend to have different crowds going to the south than sort of further.
Mm.
I mean, festivals at that time are great.
Yeah.
If you get those.
Yeah, I would like to do something like that.
So, what to you is a good song? Have you certain ways of telling?
If it's good.
Yeah.
It's just if it makes you feel good. You play it and you're listening, and the song's moving. Or it, to me, it's just if it feels good. That is all that matters in the end. Up, nothing else matters to me.
Mm-hmm.
If it could be the best thing in the world or the best crafted song or whatever, but if it leaves you cold, then it's nothing.
Isn't there a danger that it's the sheer fact of having finished another song gives you such a buzz that you sort of touch with what the song really is like?
Yeah, I know what it's like after a day or two. Yeah, there is that thing, yeah, where you finish and you think, this is great. Yeah, a lot of times when I finish it, I feel sort of disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I do feel like extensive demos, so like, I actually finish the, like, put the drums on and everything like that. And a lot of times I feel disappointed. And it's only when I start playing them to other people, like, I know. But after a few days and you put it on, you can usually tell. You know, you either get, it makes you feel good or it doesn't. Yeah. I've got a lot of people that I can play it to, though, which helps. You know, just like girls and things like that, who seem to have a good feel for what's for music. Yeah.
Well, like having obviously been involved in music for so long as a kind of a fan who also played music and really didn't mind that business side of it that much.
Yeah.
How do you feel now being sort of like part of business, which is sort of really quite cynical and thinks about image and all that stuff?
Yeah. I'm quite lucky with this company that I'm with at the moment. Image isn't a priority. It's not. They don't. There's not, nobody's ever spoke to me about Image at all.
Really?
Nobody's ever mentioned anything about it. What clothes I should wear. Nothing. Nobody's ever said anything.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the guy that's heading in, it's a guy called oh God, what's his name again? John. I'll remember in a wee minute. God, I should know. He's my A&R man. I was going to say John Martin because he produces the House Martins.
Oh.
but he doesn't go on about things like that. You know, he just lets you get on with it. Doesn't interfere. But if I had actually finished the album before he heard it, come along the very last mix. Come along, says what he likes, and that's it. Doesn't say he should be wearing this or wearing that or, because nobody for record company knows. People in the record company don't know what you should wear. Yeah, like bands develop these things themselves anyway. Yeah.
Well, is there, I trust Paul walking in, his time's up.
What's it, John's name?
Hello?
The head A&R at Paul Dar, I forgot his
John
name.
Williams.
John Williams, that's a Christ. I was thinking it was John Martin.
Martin, really?
I've Martin just been talking about John Martin. Talking about John Martin a wee while ago, you see.
Yeah, John Williams,
thanks,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the stuff, because it's.
Is there anything you would like to add that you
can
touch on?
No, I just thought myself a nice guy. Nah, I can't think of anything else. I think I've told you my whole life.
Wow,
yeah,
it's
a
good
age.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Hans Peter.